I'm George Wacker with Lehigh Valley with Love.
And I'm Northampton County Commissioner Jeff Warren.
Welcome to Off the Record with Lehigh Valley with Love, where we dive into the real topics shaping our community, from mental health to warehouses, local businesses to community events. If it matters to the Lehigh Valley, we're talking about it.
That's right. Each episode, we'll sit down with local experts, leaders, and community members to explore the issues that impact our lives. Some topics are so big, they're actually going to span multiple episodes. This isn't just another podcast. It's a conversation about what makes the Lehigh Valley tick. So let's get started.
A big thank you to our partners for making these episodes happen. Banco Beverage Company, Molly's Irish Grill and Sports Pub, Michael Bernadin of Howard Schaefer and Associates with RE/MAX Real Estate, WDIY 88.1 FM, and our friends at Wind Creek Event Center. Find out more at lvwithlove.com. Welcome to the first episode of Off the Record with Lehigh Valley with Love. I'm George Wacker, and I'm joined by my co-host, Northampton County Commissioner Jeff Warren. Together, we're exploring the big topics that matter to our community. For our first series, we're tackling mental health, an issue that affects so many people across the Lehigh Valley.
That's right. Joining us today are Northampton County Executive Lamont McClure and State Representative Mike Schlossberg, who are both very deeply involved in addressing this challenge. And this conversation is just the beginning of a multi-part series where we're going to hear from advocates, professionals, and community leaders working to improve mental health access and outcomes. So let's dive in here. We have a lot of topics, guys, that we want to really get to during this discussion because it's an important discussion. And Mike, I'm going to start with you because I want to go back to a time when I was actually shocked, quite frankly, by something that one of our public officials did here in the Lehigh Valley. And quite frankly, that was you.
I mean, really confused for a second.
No, you have been at the forefront of this debate and this issue of mental health in Harrisburg for so long in terms of wanting to develop more meaningful mental health policies. But what I was initially getting at is that from a pure public standpoint, it started, I think, for like when you published that op-ed years ago, talking about how you were suicidal when you were younger and how that moment continues to be one of the many reasons that you fight for mental health policies and funding in the Pennsylvania State House. And it was a vulnerable moment in your life where you let your constituents, I mean, tens of thousands of individuals throughout the Lehigh Valley, into your personal life. I'm wondering, Mike, can you go back to that time and describe how and why you really made the decision to talk about something so personal and so vulnerable with the public?
Well, then thank you, Jeff. And I'm appreciative and flattered you remember that. As you said, you know, I've had depression, anxiety issues most of my life. I have been suicidal. I see a therapist. I take medication. And I've tried to use my experiences with mental illness to not only destigmatize the issue, but honestly, more importantly, try to get others to talk about the issue themselves. Now, that was always something I wanted to do as a public official, and it was never like a secret. I told, you know, people if it came up in conversation. But the reason I wrote that op-ed was actually the suicide of Robin Williams. This was in August of 2014. And like a lot of people who suffered from mental illness, when he died by suicide, you take it personally because you think he had everything. That he was amazing. He was a force of nature. He had all the money in the world. And if he lost, what hope do I have? And then later, you know, I'm on Facebook and my Facebook feed is filled with, you know, tributes to him. And somebody to this day, I don't know who, but I wish I could shake the dude's hand because his stupid comment that I defriended this guy on the spot, so I don't remember who it is, but his stupid comment changed my life. He said something to the effect of, shame Robin Williams killed himself. He just needed to pray harder to Jesus. It was something like that. And I remember being like, bet. Okay, well, that's actually how people think. This is good to know. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, typed out an angry Facebook status and about that. And, you know, went to bed and I woke up the next morning. I turned to my wife and said, I think I still have something to say. She said, yeah. I think it's time. So I wrote the op-ed and, you know, for my part, inserted myself into a very public conversation about mental health and about mental health resources and trying to improve mental health and increase mental health resources. You know, and we are comparatively lucky in Lehigh Valley. And that's something I really find out when I have conversations with my colleagues across the Commonwealth. Like, we've got two major healthcare networks that are both, you know, could they do more? Always. Do they have a lot? They do. they're both Lehigh Valley Health Network and St. Luke's University Health Network are both really invested in behavioral health and put a lot of resources into the ground and made us comparatively lucky. But no matter how good we are as a region, if as a country we're failing, we're only going to do so much. And the truth is we have a brutal shortage of behavioral health specialists, yep, from social workers to psychologists and psychiatrists and everything in between. And until the day comes that we really invest in getting more people into the profession and increasing reimbursement rates and insurance payouts, we're going to continue to suffer from that shortage.
Absolutely. We certainly are. And George, I know that you wanted to talk about specific issues with Lamont. And so, I mean, feel free, buddy.
Well, you just talked about the funding. And I think we wanted to talk to you guys first before we talk to some of the professionals and mental health people that professionals that you've talked about. We want to know, you know, on a county level in Northampton County, Lamont, you've been an advocate for mental health funding. Can you share what steps Northampton County is taking to address these challenges and what goes into that?
Well, absolutely. But, you know, in the first instance, let me just say this. It is a crisis of monumental proportion.
It is.
And we need to continue to be loud about it, despite some of the gains that Mike has been able to spearhead in Harrisburg for us. And let me just say before I get into some of the things that I think are going on, I want to say Mike Schlossberg, he does not like to be described as any kind of brave in public, but he is. And he tells his story to lend support, right, to the wider public. He just wants to be supportive. But his story also gives him gravitas when it comes to leading in Harrisburg to get more money. So, Mike, you know, again, I know I've said it publicly before, but thank you.
You have,
so
and I appreciate it every time. Thank you so much
for what you do.
Thank you.
Because we would be further behind if it weren't for you.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I did hear what Mike had to say about the hospital systems, and the hospital systems clearly are in the healthcare space. But there is a chasm created after private insurance and medical assistance will no longer cover the treatment. There's this chasm's the wrong word. There's a desert.
Mm-hmm. That's a good word.
Especially for people with serious mental illness. And we do not have sufficient funds here in Northampton County or in the Valley to treat all the folks with serious mental illness. And, you know, there's in Northampton County alone, 319,000 people, and approximately one of five people has a diagnosable mental illness or disorder, if not a serious mental illness disorder. So almost 20% of our population. So there's lots and lots of folks who are going underserved, and, It is multifactorial. There just aren't enough residential homes with enough staff for folks with serious mental illness to be cared for. And what happens is a lot of these folks end up in our prison. By some estimates, almost one third of our population in Northampton County prison at any given time has some diagnosable mental illness or disorder, and approximately 20% of them have a serious mental illness. And very often, and so prison is no place for someone with schizophrenia. It is no place. Right. And often these are very minor charges that have these folks in prison. And there's no way to transition them out because there isn't a framework for care for people with serious mental illness to keep them out of prison.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that I think it's really important for us to talk about, let's talk about how we got here, because mm-hmm. it's going to frame everything that we talk about for the rest of tonight and for the rest of your series.
The history is important. The history is very important.
And I don't want to bore anybody, but anyone who's seen One Who Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, if you haven't seen the movie, you should watch it or read the book. Even better, read a book. Or seen Girl Interrupted, So
with drove by the Allentown State Hospital ever.
Yep. Yep. You know?
Very, very important though. There was a time in this country when our mental health system and specifically our institutions came under attack, and rightfully so, for the way people who were institutionalized were being treated. And even more importantly, some people should not have been institutionalized at all. It had become too easy to institutionalize people, right? So one flew over the cuckoo's nest, mistreatment of people in institutions. Girl interrupted people who shouldn't have been in institutions.
Yep.
And then the ACLU filed lawsuits, famously in New York. And I'm a trial lawyer. And I made my living for many years before elected office practicing law. And what I tell people all the time is the law is not a scalpel. It is a baseball bat. And when the ACLU filed those lawsuits, they took a baseball bat to the mental health system in this country. And what happened was after they started winning those lawsuits, and they should have won some of them, right? They should have. They did the right thing by filing those lawsuits. But the unintended consequences were states like New York started closing their state hospitals.
And then
the crisis started. And then states all over the country started following suit. And now we're here where we are today with insufficient resources for people with serious mental illness. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go on a...
No, that's great context.
If anybody was listening to this podcast, they're watching Girl Interrupted now.
Yeah. Let's hope. Get them some education here.
Sorry, Lamont McClure.
Yes.
But I think looking at that history is important, you know, and for maybe some people who are, because we talk about tearing down the Allentown State Hospital. There was something, there was a place where people were getting treated, you know, and it's, where do they go now? So
the, Lamont, did I cut you off? I'm sorry.
No, I'm good. I was
So and the answer to that, George, was they wound up in two places, either the streets or jail. You know, the state hospital system was dramatically altered in the 80s. Well, not so much the 80s, really the 90s and the 2000s. I remember being on Allentown City Council when the state came to us and said, we're closing the Allentown State Hospital. And the promise at the time, when all these state hospitals were closed, was that people who were in there were going to go into group homes and they were going to get adequate treatment and they were going to be taken care of.
Yeah.
Can we curse on this, George? Can I?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was bullshit. Like, just plain and simple, it was bullshit.
Right. Yep.
This happened around the time of the Great Recession. Funding was eviscerated for human services, in particular, 2013-2014 budget in Pennsylvania cut human services, which, as we all know, counties are just swimming in money to care for the poorest and those in the most need.
Yep.
The end result being that the resources weren't there for people with mental health, and so a lot of people wound up committing crimes, going into jail, living on the streets, or becoming the victims of violence. And because people with mental illness, by the way, are far more likely to be the victims of violence rather than the perpetrators of violence. So by doing that, we exacerbated a system that was already straining. And in a lot of places, we broke it, which helps explain how we got to here. And here, as we're talking about mental illness, really is a long gamut. You've got everything from the kids that are too anxious and depressed for a variety of reasons, to people with paranoid schizophrenia who are running around on the streets while also suffering from substance abuse disorders. So mental health is a really broad term, and that's one of the reasons I think that it's so important that we discuss it, and that we discuss it with specificity, because if you're talking about mental illness, you could really tackle it from a thousand different areas.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Mike, it really goes to, and really the next topic I wanted to get into, because of course we talk about funding. We talk about funding all the time, whether it's local government, state government, federal government, you know, what we're doing at the county level, what you're doing out in Harrisburg. But the reality is you talked about those cuts from so many years ago. I know that the state legislature this past year provided an additional $70 million into county mental health services and spent approximately, I think it was about $950 million in total. And that really does sound like a lot of money to a lot of folks. And it is a lot of money. But as we're moving forward, we're learning more and more about mental health. Like you said, you know, the various components to it, its complexities, and how to effectively really treat folks. And various organizations and groups know how much it's going to cost to get us where we need to be. And at the end of the day, I kind of do wonder what's holding us back. It's one of the reasons why I sent a letter to our state legislative delegation recently here in Northampton County saying, look, we need to start looking at the state budget this next year. And we need to look at what County Commissioners Association of Pennsylvania said, $1 billion phased in over these next few years. We need to really start working on a plan of action here. So again, at the end of the day, kind of Mike, what's holding us back really with the funding?
I mean, combination of the thing, first and foremost, is political will. Yeah. There have been multiple efforts to increase much more than what the governor and what we've done in the past have asked for behavioral health funding. Last year's session, I had a bill to put another $100 million into behavioral health. It passed like 171 to 30. Vast majority, every Democrat and the vast majority of Republicans voted for it. It was a negotiated product between the Democrats and Republicans, and the state Senate said no, and that was the end of it.
Yeah.
So a lack of political will remains, I'd say, the biggest challenge. But I also want to be fair. It's not as if we lack very valid priorities to spend dollars on in government. We're always dealing with a limited amount of resources, and where you put those resources is critically important. I will always endlessly advocate for more resources into behavioral health, not only because it's a terrible problem, because it's a problem that's getting worse, and it's a problem where dollars can demonstrably make a big difference, can get more people in the field, can increase enforcement of insurance problems, can open more clinics, can open more beds, and can treat people better and help them restore their entire life.
And one thing I wanted to talk about in regards to where this kind of has gotten more attention, in my opinion anyway, is when the pandemic started.
Yeah.
And whether that's a good thing. Well, yeah. Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it really ripped the top off where we're allowed to talk about it more, but we were also really exposed to it more. And I think even with our own things, I was talking to Jeff before we started, you know, beginning of the pandemic, it was ordering whiskey from a truck, you know, from Social Still, because they try to support local business. And then after a while, you're like, well, this is probably not the healthiest thing to be doing.
Right.
And you know, and I think we all had to take a look at that. You know, do you still see some of that fallout even today? And do you think it gets worse before it gets better? Or?
Well, to Mike's point earlier that he made, there are numerous facets to this large topic of mental health. But I think that the most pressing issue is that of serious mental illness. Because those are the people who need the most intensive support. And by support, I mean they need residences.
And they need, like you said, they are possibly the people who are the furthest away from that care. And that seems a little ridiculous, right?
They need affordable housing.
Yeah.
They need supports so that they can get a job. And mm-hmm. keep a job, because these folks, properly supported, many can work. So, but you need proper supports for that. There's a lot of wraparound. I know we're always talking about wraparound services, but there are a lot of wraparound services that go into supporting folks. But there's just not enough money to have the residences operating. There's not enough money to staff the residences. And frankly, while I think Harrisburg can do more, I don't think Harrisburg, even our state government, has the ability to totally address this problem. And unfortunately, institutions like prisons are going to continue to disproportionately bear the burden, and inadequately so, despite the fact that they do their very best inside those institutions. And I would sound a note, because both Lehigh and Northampton County still have publicly owned nursing homes. Lots mm-hmm. of these folks are going to end up in Cedarbrook and Graysdale as well, going forward into the future, which will also tax the body politic and the taxpayers. I mean, let me just be, you know, clear.
You're being candid. Yeah.
And so it's a huge problem. And I think part of the problem, and I'd be really fascinated to hear what Mike thinks about this, coming off our conversation earlier about the closing of the state hospitals and the new construct for how we support people with serious mental illness, which is basically Harrisburg sends the county the money to find private businesses, most often organized as charities, but sometimes for profit, and pays them to help care for, house, and support these folks. It's a terribly expensive and inefficient system compared to the old system we had when we're talking about these folks now being homeless or in prison, right? Because those are the consequences of what had happened. So I'd be interested in what Mike thinks of my sort of overall theory about that.
I think that we're kind of having the same conversation here, especially around the long-term downstream impacts of an unaddressed mental health crisis that impacts every generation, but particularly, and maybe most importantly, our youngest generation, which has really borne the brunt of the mental illness problems that we face right now. And in the long run, what Lamont said is true. We do have an inefficient system. We have a system that is designed in some ways to put more money into the hands of others. The system could be run a lot better. You could say that undoubtedly about the entire American healthcare system.
Yes.
Which is a much, that's a conversation that goes well above my pay grade. My pay grade here as a little state legislator. But it's all true. What I will say, especially, and that's that when I think of how the pandemic impacted mental illness, I think about it from a few perspectives, and I'll come back to where I just started in a second. First, you know, the obvious answer is that mental illness went through the roof among every generation. I think the pandemic really helped teach something that a lot of social scientists, psychologists, and psychiatrists have been screaming for years, which is that our obsession with a digital lifestyle has its place and has its merits. But when you break away physical face-to-face social interaction, you break something in people. And the pandemic exacerbated that. And it exacerbated that, I think, the most among kids who really rely on that face-to-face interaction, which helps in part, I think, explain why rates of mental illness went up the most among them. The pandemic had a slew of negative life impacts on people that adults and kids are still trying to recover from. But I think the most insidious way that the pandemic impacted mental health, and this is what I was talking about before, or what we were both talking about, really is the downstream impact. Because you think of the way that the pandemic has fundamentally reordered our society, changed our economy, made us more obsessed with digital at the expense of face-to-face, and the way that that will alter the lives of people. But again, especially kids who had the least experience of the real world that, you know, the four of us and I'm sure many of your listeners had. I think we're all, well, Lamont, how old are your kids?
Luke is going to be 21 in June, Mike.
Okay, so really not that old.
Right,
yes,
in
the three of us.
He was right in the middle of it, and right. it was hard on him.
Yeah, oh yeah. And the three of us have Gen Zers, so like
And I had to make a decision to keep my daughter. Like we were on that cusp of, do you put her in or out? And we kept her out for a year strictly because of COVID.
So. We did at homeschool during the worst of it. Like so every parent had to make a really, you know, a terrible decision, which you were screwed either way. Behind me, so these three blue things, this was a gift from my staff because these are three things that I said nonstop during the pandemic. There are no good choices, only less bad. That was the attitude, actually. I think we had no good choices. None of us had good choices. And no matter what you did, something bad was going to happen. What I didn't think about at the time during the pandemic and what I think is really manifesting itself now to this day is the way that it will continue to harm, especially our kids. And I really worry about every younger generation member's long-term mental health, given the way that these numbers are going. But in particular, as a result of the negative impacts of the pandemic and the impact that that had on our entire social fabric, a further dive into a digital life, the power that put into the hands of social media companies and of big tech companies, the way that algorithms can skew and radicalize our kids in any direction. And it's something that scares the hell out of me. It really is.
I do wonder, when I reflect on these past few years, gentlemen, with my daughters, I have identical twin daughters who are 13 years old now. Mike, in terms of talking about the impact on our kids. My kids have actually kind of been coming out on the other side of, I miss the face-to-face interaction. Good. I actually miss it. Yeah. And I do wonder if we don't hear those stories enough, perhaps. Yep. And I think there are kids out there that not only miss the face-to-face interaction, they miss the sleepovers, you know, with their friends. Yeah. They miss being able to just, I mean, it just going to somebody's house on a Friday night after school to hang out instead of going on FaceTime. But there is that societal pressure that says, no, you got to be right in front of this here.
Right.
Instead of actually going.
And Jeff, to your point, you know, you're playing all those guitars behind you. Your kids probably want to get out as much as possible.
You're right, Mr. County Executive. Yes, you're absolutely correct.
Freebird. Yeah, Jeff's going to do the theme song for this episode.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a good idea.
But I mean, as we're moving along with the conversation, though, and this has been a fantastic conversation, as we maybe start to wrap things up here, I'm not too sure, George, you know, how much time we have here. But for Mike, I'd really like to hear about what endeavors that you've not only embarked on in Harrisburg, you've talked about some of them already, but what you're planning to potentially do in the future.
Yeah.
2025, you know, it's going to be the start of a new legislative session for you all. And so, like, where are you going to be going with this out in Harrisburg?
So two things. First of all, to his infinite credit, Governor Shapiro has really made an effort to prioritize behavioral health. He hasn't gotten everything he's wanted, but it hasn't been for lack of trying.
Right.
It has been for lack of political will. He supported my $100 million plan. He gave over his tenure $40 million additional dollars to the counties, which is great. Not enough, but it's a good start. He tried to fund 988 crisis centers with a stable revenue stream. He tried to fund walk-in crisis centers. And a lot of these instances, he got shut down by my Republican friends. For me this year, I will be working with his office, with my colleagues in the House, and hopefully in the Senate as well, to do a couple of things. Most important thing, I think, is more dollars to get people into the workforce. So increase grant and loan programs, increase reimbursement rates in a targeted way so that we can actually pay mental health workers what they need. In addition to some of the previous efforts, funding 988 and funding our counties. Second, a big one, and this actually goes back to what we were talking about before, the big legislative issue I want to tackle is the Mental Health Procedures Act, which is the 302 system, the system by which people are involuntarily held against their will because of a behavioral health crisis. It was written in 1976, has barely been updated since that time, and is so old and out of date, it uses words like mental retardation. So there's a lot of technical things we need to do in the act, including, you know, having a better system of who can do what, how long somebody can be held, under what circumstances they can be held, what's law enforcement's involvement. It's a deeply intricate and technical thing, and technical piece of law that impacts a lot of stakeholders, including the counties. I'm hoping to hold a couple of hearings this year on it and try to make some desperately needed updates to the system.
And Labatt, same question to you.
So I'm going to continue my advocacy for more funding for folks with serious mental illness. Now, we talked about the broad range, the entire panoply of mental illness and disorders here today, and they're all important. But what my folks in our department, in our mental health folks are saying is, look, the folks that we have the most difficulty serving are the folks with serious mental illness, like schizophrenia, bipolar disorders, things of that nature. And we need to get as many dollars as we can to the counties. And Northampton County needs many millions more dollars to help the folks, to help support the folks with serious mental illness so we keep them out from under bridges. We keep them out of Northampton County Prison, and we keep them out of Graysdale Nursing Home, and we keep them in a safe, supportive environment where they can afford to live and they can get their medications regularly administered, and where if they're doing well enough, they can go to work as opposed to go to jail. So that's what my mental health folks here in the county want me to continue advocating for, and that's what I'm going to continue to do.
What do you think, like the layperson, you know, I voted in for people who I feel like are supportive of mental health issues, you know, but it's frustrating sometimes to hear this stuff. My God, it's in the coffers. What can somebody do? You know, is it just this, talking about it? Is it stuff like Mike, like putting yourself out there, maybe having these discussions with friends that are uncomfortable?
The more people are willing to do that, the better. As I said, you know, I've talked about the issue, like I said before, to destigmatize it, sure. But more importantly, to try to get other people to do it, because you know, you're going to be most impactful in an audience that people can relate to you and feel comfortable to you. As you know, as an elected official, to a lot of people, they will look at me and be like, you are something other, which is cool. I get that. So if I can inspire you to talk about you, then I'm doing my job. And yep. I will create a more relatable system. I am a 41-year-old white Jewish male. I am, you know, my people are not in need of convincing that mental health is real. But if I can convince somebody who's a woman or who's Black or Hispanic to talk about their behavioral health issues, then we're going to be in a better spot. But second, and from a policy perspective, like call elected officials and say, what are you doing? People... when I first started talking about this, as I said, my public conversation about behavioral health began because I was pissed off about a Facebook status. But it's an issue that people care about. It's actually a sneakily politically impactful issue. I cannot tell you how many people I've had talk to me about it, you know, to the point where now I like use it on my political mail, which is never something I anticipated I would be able to do. So.
Right?
People like the average person out there needs to work with groups like NAMI, National Alliance for Mental Illness, or the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, AFSP, there we go. Or just do it on your own. Get involved and get active in this political issue. It's one where there's still a question of importance because of a lack of political will. So the job of regular voters and constituents is to make elected officials feel that political will. And if they don't, make them feel political pain.
I think it's fantastic that we have four dudes here talking about this, quite frankly. I think it's good that you can have, you know, three elected officials here, one marketing guru here, being able to talk about this issue, one, in an intelligent way, but two, in a way where, you know, we don't mind talking about the fact that, Mike, you see a therapist, I see a therapist and have for many, many years. I don't mind talking about it if it's going to make some sort of impact where somebody is going to actually say, oh, really? You too?
Yeah.
And when you can create connection with regard to this issue,
let's not go overboard with talking about how intelligent we are.
That's true.
I don't know how smart I can be.
You know, there is one thing I would like to say to George's question. You know, people who have my job and jobs like mine historically pretended like they weren't responsible on the local level for the provision of mental health services.
They tried to
silo it
because
there were no votes there. And if there was a political impact, there was a negative political impact. There are lots of folks now like me, my counterpart in Lehigh County, Phil Armstrong. We're with Mike at all the rallies.
Always.
And we're leaning into our mental health services at the county level. We're leaning in advocacy. And I think one of the things we do, and I don't want to make this partisan because I want everybody to listen to your podcast, but Mike's got colleagues in my county who aren't voting with us on this issue, who I know if we bring them in and help educate them, they'll care about it. And then if they were still refused to vote that way, and I'm thinking of Ann Flood and Joe Emmerich and Zach Mako, I know these people care about people.
Yeah, but
they're not voting like they care about people. And part of it is we're not bringing them in and showing them what's happening. I mean, maybe I need to bring them to the prison and let them see that I had to renovate a tier so that schizophrenic people who are in there could move around, because a schizophrenic person needs to move more than not every schizophrenic people, but many schizophrenic people need to constantly be on the move. And, you know, if we can't touch their hearts, you know, maybe we can convince them politically it's in their interest to vote in that way. And I'm only talking about Northampton County. I'm not talking about anywhere else because I don't know about anywhere else. But George, you were asking what we could do. We need to bring those people in because Mike needs a couple of those votes.
Yeah. I mean, and that 20%, that's 20% whether you're Republican or Democrat. So,
absolutely.
You know, that's how I look at it.
And, absolutely.
I just want to say I appreciate the time that you spent with Jeff and I tonight to talk about this issue. You know, important enough that we're really excited that we're going to have a couple other interviews with, you know, some physicians and other people from throughout the Lehigh Valley who are involved in organizations and who actually suffer from mental health and are illness and are going to talk to us about it. So we appreciate it. And Jeff, I want to thank you for helping me out with this first episode. This has been fantastic, and I'm looking forward to more.
Absolutely, George. We're going to talk. We're going to have a lot of great discussions, I should say, in the future, not just on mental health, but other issues that are going on here in the Lehigh Valley community. I can't wait to dive into it with you, buddy.
And Mike and Lamont, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate
your
time
and
everything that you're honestly doing. You know, like, I don't want to talk you up too much, but the fact that we have local, local politicians who are willing to come on and talk about like mental health, like you said, it might not be something that's getting you votes, but you're willing to come on here. Hopefully it is, but you're willing
honor to be here and to be with Mike to talk about these issues.
Likewise, Lamont, thank you.
It's a big deal, and I really appreciate it. So thank you guys.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you for doing this.
Jeff, that was great. I want to make sure we thank our guests, Lamont and Mike. That was a great conversation.
It was a fantastic conversation. We have two more that are going to be coming on mental health during the course of this series. Wanted to let everybody know about that. And George and I are going to continue to talk about community-based issues that really matter to our Lehigh Valley community well into the future.
Yeah, we're looking forward to this project. We're really thankful that you're tuning in and listening, and looking forward to seeing you on the next show. A big thank you to our partners for making these episodes happen: Banco Beverage Company, Molly's Irish Grill and Sports Pub, Michael Bernadin of Howard Schaefer and Associates with RE/MAX Real Estate, WDIY 88.1 FM, and our friends at Wind Creek Event Center. Find out more at lvwithlove.com.